I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Dan Menigan back with you here on The Fan on a Sunday morning. I'm here till 11 o'clock. My buddy Garrett Bush in a barbershop takeover after that. This baseball stuff is fascinating to me. What's taking place between the Astros, the Red Sox, what happened to the Mets, all of these different things is absolutely fascinating to me. And so we will talk to the guy who was behind a lot of the breaking news. And he joins us right now on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He is Jared Diamond of the Wall Street Journal. You can follow him on Twitter at Jared Diamond. Jared, how you bet, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Not bad. How was Good Morning America?
That was fun. Did you get to watch it?
Oh, yeah. We had it on in here. The problem is I do a radio show, so it's on mute. So we saw you, but...
All right. Well, at least you saw my beautiful face.
Exactly, man. All right. So let's dig into this. So what is... Help me out here to understand, what exactly is Codebreaker?
Well, Codebreaker is an Excel-based application that is written with a little bit of a code algorithm sort of thing that essentially was used by the Astros to steal signs. Essentially, the way it worked was that somebody from the Astros would watch a live feed of the game, would plug the catcher signs that they saw into the spreadsheet, and then would plug in the type of pitch that was actually thrown. And then after a couple of pitches, Codebreaker was essentially able to tell the Astros what the relevant sign scheme was and how it corresponded with individual pitches. And then the Astros found ways to disseminate that information to batters.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So it was going into this algorithm, and then it was plugging itself down into the players who were then watching the closed caption and moving the sign and relaying the sign as they see fit, whether it was smashing a trash can or whatever else would come down.
I was saying that's where it ended up. It started a little more simply, where they would be relaying it to runners on second base through intermediaries who would relay it to batters. It seems that at some point around June, players realized, hey, we don't have to wait for a runner to get on second base to take advantage of this information. Why don't we come up with a way to start sending it to the batter directly? And that's when the garbage can came in.
Amazing. So how much of this do you believe that A.J. Hinch knew was taking place?
Look, A.J. Hinch certainly knew that the Astros were cheating. That's not even up for dispute anymore. There's no question that he knew that the Astros had some sort of sign-stealing operation. He knew about the banging. There were at least one email that I reported on in my story this weekend that had an Astros, I think Jeff Luhnow himself, saying how much of this do you think Hinch knows. Now it's sort of a little bit unclear exactly what this was in the context of that email, but it's safe to say that it was some sort of covert operation. At this point, I think it's safe to say that A.J. Hinch certainly knew, at least had some knowledge of what was going on, and we know pretty definitively that he didn't stop it. He essentially said that himself in his interview with Tom Verducci on Friday.
So Carlos Delgado used to, like, when he would find stuff out, he would write it down in a book and all of that kind of stuff and would use that to his advantage there. Do you see this as being a little bit more in-depth than what he was doing and actually wrong and what Delgado was doing as gamesmanship, or is it all in the same boat in the eyes of baseball?
Well, look, here's the difference. What Carlos Delgado was doing was essentially studying for the test. If you're going back and watching old game footage and you could figure out the signs and then you employ that information in game, that just means you did your homework. The Astros weren't just doing their homework. They were getting the answers to the test while the test was going on. That's really the big difference. And Jeff Luhnow told MLB investigators that he was under the assumption that Codebreaker was only going to be used the first way, the legal way. But it's very clear we now know that it was not. And there's a big difference between using this stuff and stealing signs before games and after games and using it as a tool as sort of using it for homework than watching it during games live and using the technology to relay that information to batters. And look, Codebreaker couldn't really work anymore here in 2020. Now there's essentially no live feeds of games available in and around clubhouses. That's sort of why MLB installed this 8-second delay on almost every single monitor anywhere near the field.
Jared Diamond from the Wall Street Journal joins us. So what is the fallout, do you believe, of what you have reported here? What do you think Major League Baseball does with this information?
Well, look, MLB knew all of this. I think that's what has been so upsetting, I think, to some fans, is that Major League Baseball was aware of all of this before they released their public reports. So now we're learning that there was a lot that was going on that they uncovered in their investigation that they didn't tell the fans publicly, that was not put in Rob Manfred's report. And I think that is what's upset a lot of people. And it's also, I think in general, just raised questions about the investigation, what Major League Baseball is telling us, what they want us to know and what they don't. Because clearly something like Codebreaker would probably have been very interesting to fans who put in that public report. And MLB decided for whatever reason that it wasn't going to talk about it. So I wonder if they're going to have to do anything else now. But there's nothing new in my story, at least, that MLB didn't already know. And I think that's really part of the story to me.
Interesting stuff. Incredibly interesting stuff, Jared. It was an awesome piece. You could read it in the Wall Street Journal. All right, let's move into another mess that Major League Baseball has on its hands, which is Mookie Betts. And what is the latest that's going on with the Mookie Betts trade? Where do we currently sit?
Yeah, this is kind of a disaster of a situation right now. It seems to be that the proposed three-way, almost four-way trade, if you involve the separate Angels-Dodgers deal, it does appear that that trade, in the form that had been reported, is not going to happen, at least in the way that we thought it was. This stems from the fact that the Twins prospect that they were going to send to the Red Sox, a young pitcher, he, according to now the Red Sox in reports, they weren't thrilled with his medical. And that has sort of held up the deal. So now it's unclear exactly what's going to happen. But it's a very difficult and sort of uncomfortable situation because Mookie Betts and David Price have been reading now for almost a week that they were going to be playing for the Dodgers in 2020. Spring training starts in like 3 days. And I just don't see how at this point Mookie Betts could go back to the Red Sox and actually play a season for them after all this has gone on. The other thing that's so interesting about it is that there's at least some speculation, some evidence, that the Red Sox are responding to the fact that the response to the trade in the public was so negative. And that to me is just so stunning, because how could the Red Sox be surprised that fans reacted negatively to them trading a 27-year-old superstar in the prime of his career? I think that alone says a lot about where we are in baseball in 2020.
That's the part that blew me away too, is the fact that we don't see this. These kind of trades don't happen where one of the arguably the five best players in baseball and the only person who can rival Mike Trout in his prime, like, is going to move from one team to another team. And the Red Sox are sitting there going like, what? People don't like this trade? Of course they don't like this trade. You're trading one of the best players in baseball. Of course people aren't going to like it.
Yeah, it says a lot about where we are in baseball today, that teams have just come to expect that fans are all in on rebuilds and tanking and the process, and we have to be sustainable and we need prospects and this and that and the other. You know, I think to an extent fans are wising up more and more and realizing, you know, all that is great, but what's a lot better is really great major league players, especially in Boston. You know, it's one thing to sell a deal like this, sell, quote-unquote, the process in Kansas City or Milwaukee or wherever. But to sell that in Boston, Red Sox fans aren't dumb. They've seen their team win four World Series now in the last 15 years or so. They have an unbelievable amount of money. And there's just no excuse, I think, in the eyes of Red Sox fans to ever rebuild. And you know what? I just think in general there's way too much made of this idea of, well, we may lose him, so we have to get something for him now. You know what? Yeah, the Red Sox might lose Mookie Betts. It is certainly a possibility. But there is great value in keeping him in 2020 and trying to actually win another World Series or get back in the playoffs. And at the end of the day, if they do that and he leaves, okay, so he leaves. The Red Sox have enough money to sign other free agents. They'll bring up more players. The reason you develop your own players, the reason you do all of this, is to have players like Mookie Betts trying to lead you to a championship. And there's no way that I'll believe a story that the Red Sox cannot win with the team they currently have, because they still have a very good team in spite of the struggles they had last year. It's a team that, as far as I'm concerned with Mookie Betts, is still a team that could compete for the playoffs in 2020.
It's the same problem we're having here in Cleveland with Francisco Lindor, where everybody is looking at this and saying, okay, this is the inevitable thing. They need to trade him because he's just going to leave anyway. Well, you're closer to winning a title with a Francisco Lindor than you are with the pieces parts that help to build a Francisco Lindor. So this brings me to the Indians this season. Why do you believe that they've kind of been sitting on their hands and haven't made the giant move to help get them over the hunt? Or do you think they're good enough that they don't need to?
It is tough. It does sort of feel like, I'm sure everybody would agree, it does sort of feel like that window that seems so wide open in 2016 is at least in the process of starting to close. Part of that is because the Indians haven't gotten considerably better, but I think what's bigger than that is that teams in the AL Central have gotten a lot better. I mean, the Twins are really, really good. The White Sox have made big improvements, and the reality is the Indians have not. They've gotten, you would argue, worse. I mean, there's no way to spin losing Corey Kluber. There's just not. There's no way you could say that's a good thing for the Indians. That said, look, they still have a good starting rotation led by Mike Clevinger and Shane Bieber. They still have a lineup that has Lindor and Jose Ramirez, who hopefully gets off to a better start than it did last year. So this is a good team. But like I said, the challenge is that you look at the Twins right now and you really believe they have a chance to be great. And that's a challenge for Cleveland.
So if you look at this team right now and the remaining just free agents that are out there, is there anybody out there who you think Cleveland could bring in and just be a guy who can help them along the way? Or are they kind of, this is the team that we're looking at?
This is pretty much the team we're looking at. Look, spring training starts, I don't know when the Indians specifically report, but many teams are reporting pitchers and catchers on Tuesday, Wednesday of this week. And the reality is, unlike the last two off seasons, the free agent market kind of moved nicely this year, and there just isn't that much left, for better or worse. I mean, there's some guys, Yasiel Puig sort of remains. There's some other guys out there. Cameron Maven's out there. Brock Holt's out there. There's a few others, but no one's that's going to move the needle. I think the Indians fans have to accept that, generally speaking, this is the team that they're going to run with in 2020, and you hope they could hang with the Twins, and we'll see what they do. But it does sort of feel like the Indians believe that their window is starting to close.
All right, Jared, last question for you. Tell me about Swing Kings.
Swing Kings, well, thank you for asking. That's
of course.
My book, my debut book, coming out next month, March 30th. It's about the home run sort of boom in baseball and a group of players who have remade their swing from scratch by working with some weird, wacky, mad scientist coaches. And it chronicles this story and what it says about where we are in baseball here in 2020. So I hope everyone listening checks it out.
Absolutely, man. It's a great read. Nice job on all of the stuff that you've been breaking involving this Astro scandal. You've been killing it, man. And we really appreciate the time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Not a problem. He is Jared Diamond. He is a friend of the program. He joins us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.